Hello, everyone. Welcome to Celtic Preacher, podcast 216. And today we are going to be talking about resurrection. Yeah, because it's Easter, or it was Easter on Sunday. And you know, I've told the story of Easter many, many times. I've told the story about Mary of Magdalene going to Jesus' tomb on Easter morning and finding Jesus gone and the tomb's empty. I can't remember how many times I've told this story. And you know, if the story was only about somebody called Mary of Magdalene or Magdala, I'd be really bored with that story by now, right? Because the thing about Easter is that it's not just about Mary and Peter and James and John and all the others and all the other disciples. It's really about me and you and our world, everything really, because in him we live and move and have our being. But yeah, so Jesus didn't just get raised up from the dead to help his friends a couple thousand years ago. And that's why he said to them, you know, this is for everyone. Make sure this message gets out. Yeah, go tell the world I'm alive. And I am going on ahead of you. I'm going to meet you in Galilee. I'm going on ahead of you. And Galilee was like their hometown. But let me begin the story with the best part. I'm going to start with the spoiler. The spoiler of the Easter story is, the best part is that Jesus said on Easter morning, I am alive and I will meet you. I will have an encounter with you. I will have many encounters with you. That's a way of saying it. And he, that is the resurrected Christ, has been meeting people ever since. Now, what is hard, I think, what's tricky, is that sometimes it's awfully hard to recognize this resurrected one, particularly when fear gets in the way, or anxiety, or discouragement. You know, we can very easily miss God's presence. So that's, I think, what we're going to be looking at today. You know, last week, a friend asked me, she's trying to work out what Christians believe, which I must admit, you know, if you were not a follower of Christ and you really didn't know much, Easter would be very confusing for you. I mean, how do you know what's what? You know, there's a lot of competition with Easter bunnies and Cadbury chocolate eggs and, you know, ham dinners or whatever, family gatherings. It's like, what is going on here? Anyway, she asked me, what is this whole idea of Easter, she said. It's like Jesus died, right? And then the Easter message is that he's alive. I said, yeah, pretty much. That's the gist of it. But the best bit is that he's alive and desires to and wants to encounter us. It's not just something that happened to one of his friends or a few of his friends thousands of years ago. Yeah, and then she hesitated and she said, well, like he's going to encounter us in spirit, right? You mean in spirit? No, it's like, yeah. For the most part, you don't really have to worry about running into a physical Jesus, for the most part, right? So here's a little bit. I'm going to just highlight a couple of things in the Easter story, in the narrative, and some of the pieces will be a little bit more unusual than others, but the basic story is, I'm going to go through it quickly so I can get to the resurrection part. Before Jesus died, before he died, he told his friends that death wouldn't be the end of the story. So, before Jesus died, he told his friends that death wouldn't be the end of the story. But no one seemed to question such an unusual thing to say. You know, this has always been the part that's intriguing to me. He told his friends, I'm going to Jerusalem, I will die, but I will be raised up in 3 days. And you would think if somebody told you that, that you would ask, well, what do you mean by you're going to be raised up in 3 days? I mean, you would think you would ask that, wouldn't you? Well, they didn't. They didn't ask. And I think one of the reasons that they didn't ask him what he meant about rising up again after 3 days was because they were absolutely intent on avoiding making sure he wouldn't die in the first place. So the disciples, the followers, and Jesus are actually in two different places. Jesus is trying to prepare them that he is getting close to death. The disciples are doing whatever they can to make sure that it doesn't happen. Well, it ends up on the last week of his life, which we call Holy Week in the church, the week before Easter. It ends up that Jesus was arrested on the Thursday night. He was convicted, went to trial, and he hung on a cross to die on the Friday. And of course, everyone, his followers, everyone's devastated. Everyone by Friday, absolutely shocked, numb with grief. And the burial had to happen fast. Everything needed to be complete before Shabbat, which would be Shabbat. Sabbath would begin at sundown on Friday night. So on Friday, he dies in the afternoon on the cross. Common way to execute criminals in those days, 2,000 years ago. He's crucified on the Friday afternoon, and he's buried in a stone tomb. It's never been used before. It was a family tomb. It was empty. And it was given by his good friend Joseph of Arimathea. Now, this isn't Joseph, his father. This is another Joseph. But this friend of his said to the disciples, you can have my family tomb. And like I said, it was this big rush. Everything had to be completed before Shabbat. And so he's quickly prepared for burial. And he's placed in the tomb. Now, because in that culture back then, in the olden days, no work could be done on the Sabbath, Mary Magdalene has to wait until after Sabbath, before she can visit the tomb. And the idea for her is she wants to go and take care of that rushed burial. So that's why she's actually going. It had been so rushed. She went there early Easter morning, took her bag of spices to the tomb, spices like myrrh and aloes, which, by the way, was given by another friend, Nicodemus. Nicodemus provided more than 75 pounds of spices. Now, I don't know if you'll remember Nicodemus, but he was the one who was the Pharisee, who the famous line Jesus said, don't be surprised, Nicodemus, that you must be born again. Anyway, that's another story way back in John 3. Where he's questioning and he's wondering about eternal life and he's wondering about God. And when we first hear of Nicodemus, we don't actually find out, you know, did he actually believe in Jesus or did he just stay away? Well, there's a little clue here that he must have eventually put his faith and his trust in Christ, because he's the one that donates the 75 pounds of spice, actually way, way, way more than you would ever, ever need for this purpose. But anyway, that's why Mary is at the tomb on Easter morning. Actually, I'm saying a tomb, but it was really a burial chamber, like a cave, and then a stone would be placed on the cave door, and of course the stone would be sealed. So that's really the picture of it. You know, when you're thinking about it, when you're trying to imagine it, it's really like a little cave. And then you've got this massive big stone sealing the cave door. And that's what the grave looks like. It's not like our graves today at all that are buried down in the ground. It's a completely different way of burying. So the story is that, and you'll know this part, when she gets to the garden where he's buried, the stone's gone. The stone that served as a door to the tomb is gone, rolled away. So it's wide open, and she's absolutely horrified. And of course, immediately thinks that Jesus' enemies have stolen the body, desecrated the tomb. And in her distress, she asks the gardener about the missing body. And the line she says is, "Sir, if you've taken him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him." Now, this is from John's account, by the way, John 20. So that's what she says to the gardener. "Sir, if you've taken him away, tell me where you've laid him, and I'll take him away." And then this curious thing happens. The gardener says her name, Mary. And as soon as the gardener says her name, she suddenly recognizes Jesus' voice and throws her arms around him. Obviously, he's alive, right? The one who had been dead, alive, breathing, warm, Jesus, the Christ. She flings her arms around him, holds on, holds on, holds on, and Jesus says to her, "Don't keep on clinging to me, go tell the others. Don't keep on clinging, go tell the others." The original word, interestingly enough, haptu, means to fasten. So she's fastened onto him. She's holding on for dear life. Or the word means to adhere to. But he's saying, "No, Mary, don't keep doing this. Stop. You need to go tell the others. You need to go tell the others. Tell them I'm alive. Tell them I'm alive, and I will meet them up ahead." Now, he's alive, but it's not going to be life as usual. It's not going to just go back to how it all was before. And I think at this point in the story, Mary doesn't quite realize this. I think the disciples will get this later. But at this point in the story, she's just totally overjoyed that he's alive. And she runs off to tell the others. Now, here's the curious thing. He's alive, but he's not quite the same as before. He's alive, but he's not always easily recognized. She didn't recognize him. She thought he was the gardener. Right? She starts to speak to the gardener and says, "Sir, if you put him somewhere else, tell me where he is so I can go and get him." And later on, there were other friends of Jesus that said the same thing happened to them. They experienced the exact same thing. They'd say, yeah, you know, it was him, but it wasn't until after we met him and then we walked 7 miles with him on the way to Emmaus, and then after that we had dinner together, and it was after our dinner that it started to make sense, and then we had the aha moment. So why would I tell you all this? Because sometimes we get the idea that Jesus died, and then he's alive, and then everything went back to how it was before. And that is absolutely not the story at all, or it's not the whole story. It really didn't go back to how it was before. In fact, he's not with them that much longer. He's only with them several more weeks before he leaves the earth as they knew him, physically with him. So there's a lot of mystery and wonderings about this whole resurrection. So from Mary's perspective, yes, she did meet him. Actually, she touched him. But at first she thought he was the gardener. First she doesn't see anything. Then he calls her name, and then something changes in her, and then she sees him. And then she holds on to him. And then he says, nope, nope, don't cling. Go tell the others. And I think in a way that don't cling, I think gets a little bit of a warning in a way that, no, we can't go back to exactly how it was before. It's going to be different. So go on now. Leave me here now and go tell the others. And she did. That's exactly what she did. She did go and tell the others. And Jesus, from that point on, he carried on for several weeks meeting many of the disciples. He meets some when they're out fishing. He meets some when they're scared and hiding, because they are scared and hiding. Even after Easter morning, they're still scared and hiding because they're thinking, maybe we'll end up on crosses too because we're his followers. And like I said, he met some when they were traveling. And sometimes he would meet whole crowds, hundreds of people at a single time. So there's no one way that these encounters happen, which tells us that Jesus had many different ways to meet many different people. And there is no one way. And I think that's because we all need different things. But the promise is still there. It's like Jesus is saying, I didn't, you know, like I said, life doesn't go back to life as usual, but I will be with you in a different way, a new way. I'm not going to leave you like orphans, he said to Mary and John and Peter. I'm not going to leave you like an orphan. I'm going to send you my helper. I'm going to send you my breath. I'm going to send you my spirit, the comforter. Isn't that a great name for the breath of God? I'm going to send you the comforter. The comforter will never leave you. I'm always going to be with you. I'm always going to help you. This is what he promises, the resurrected one. This is what he says. Never, ever going to leave you at any time. Anytime you need courage. Anytime you need courage to do the hard thing. Anytime you feel lost. Anytime you feel lonely. Anytime you feel without a friend, you call. And I'll be with you and I'll help you. And I'm sending you the comforter. Yeah. It's a wonderful promise. Now, being our human selves, it is not always easy to recognize this help. I mean, I totally understand Mary in the garden when she looks at him and she can't see a thing. You know, that makes sense to me. how, you know, there he is, alive and well. And she thinks, I don't know where he is. He's gone. I'm left alone. Yeah, it's not always clear. We don't always see things clearly. Now, sometimes when you look back on certain events, sometimes, I think this is common, you look back on certain events and you think, oh, God must have helped me. God must have helped me then. God must have helped me during that trying time or that challenging time or that miserable time. Otherwise, I couldn't have made it. And so sometimes we do look back and we think, yeah, definitely, God was with me. God was helping me. I couldn't have made it on my own. On hindsight. So sometimes it's subtle. Sometimes the way of God is subtle. The way of God is mysterious. Sometimes help comes in the form of a friend. Sometimes God's help comes in the form of a change of heart. Like you have a change of heart. Sometimes God comes as a change of circumstance. But it's not always clear how God works, that's for sure. So, yeah. So I guess this is good to know, to not get overly discouraged if you think to yourself, I don't see God working very much here. I don't see God working very much in my life. I think that's a common thing. I think that, and actually that's the next topic we're going to be talking about next week, is doubt. But God uses all sorts of things. It's just about learning how to see differently, I suppose. You know, I remember one time that God spoke really powerfully to me, and it wasn't through a person. It was actually through a garden. And the story of this is that I was a student. I was a student pastor at the time. I was far, far from home. I was on my internship. And I was absolutely miserable. You know how it's so common to have a boss that isn't good to you? Well, it just so happened that that was my lot. I had the most awful boss. I was far from home. I was desperate to be back in Minneapolis. And the church provided a house for the student pastor. That would be me at that time. And this was back in the Midwest. And it was around Easter time. And I noticed one day that the snow was melting. And I could make out an intricate design of emerging bulbs peeking through the damp earth. And it wasn't just like 10 or 20 bulbs. There were hundreds of bulbs all set out carefully into this intricate design. Now, the only person that could have planted such a garden would have been the previous intern, the previous student pastor. Because every year there'd be a new student pastor. And so they would only stay 1 year, because that was the internship. It was only a year long. So nobody was going to be there for any length of time. But interestingly enough, this one student from the previous year, Peter, who, by the way, also had a miserable time on his internship, as was the history of this particular church. One of these things, you just wonder why they kept sending students to such a crazy place. But anyway, Peter, when he was a student, took the time to plant these bulbs. He never ever saw them grow, of course, because by the time they would come up, he'd be gone, right? So he never saw them grow. But I remember seeing these bulbs come up, the crocus and the daffodil, the tulips and the iris, they all started to appear. Every day that I would go outside, I would see this design emerge, and I would ask the people at church, and I'd say, there's this beautiful garden as part of the house. What's the story behind it? And they said, oh, no, that was Peter that planted these bulbs. I said, well, wasn't he the Peter that had a hard time here like me? Yep, he was the one, but he planted the bulbs. I guess he wanted you to enjoy them and all the other people who would come by. And I think what was so meaningful to me was that God spoke to me through that garden, because it was like new life was emerging. And you know, when you start to see these little green shoots come forth, break through the snow, it's like the earth is saying, you're going to make it. You're going to get through this just as surely as this garden grows. You're going to make it. And it was like every time I looked at the bulbs, it was like God saying, I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you. So it's just like the resurrected Christ meeting me, and not maybe the way you would expect, but it was this daily encounter with the garden and with it growing. And eventually, of course, the snow melted and the crocuses and the daffodils and the tulips and the iris all appeared. And, you know, I was still in the same place and I was still miserable, right? I'm not saying that, oh, everything was great and I was happy. No, I wasn't happy. I wanted to get back home desperately. And I did eventually. But it was enough. It was enough to get me through the time. And sometimes that's what meeting the resurrected Christ looks like. It's enough to get you through today. It's enough to get you through one breath at a time, one step at a time. Sometimes that's all we can do. But the promise is, this resurrected one, this alive one, always coming, always meeting us, never leaving us alone. There's the promise of Easter. I am with you forever.